If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today we have former Real Housewives of Dallas star Dr. Tiffany Moon on the podcast. Tiffany's always been someone that I have been drawn to since watching her on season 5 of Dallas, which was her one very memorable season on the show before it got put on pause, as they say. We did an interview during that season, and she, at the time, she was very uneasy about potentially returning to the show given all that she'd been through. Like, she was really put through the ringer by some of the women on the cast, particularly Cameron Westcott and her family, who kind of came after her during that reunion and didn't really show much genuine remorse for some of the bad behavior that she exhibited that season. Anyway, not to rehash that, but even though Tiffany held her own, the show has never returned for another season, despite Tiffany and her good friend Deandra Simmons filming test scenes with some new women for a potential 6th season that same year. In the 4 years since then, Tiffany has done a phenomenal job at keeping herself in the spotlight, in my opinion, combining her very natural star power and humor with her intellect and her career as an anesthesiologist to, I think, really broaden the scope of what she does and what she works on and what she continues. And she continues to put out amazing content and funny content and work on a variety of projects. And the latest of which is her new book, Joy Prescriptions: How I Learned to Stop Chasing Perfection and Embrace Connection, which is out on May 6th, tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Monday. It tracks her life up until this point, which is completely singular and unique, but also full of relatable moments and literal joy prescriptions, what she calls them, or basically like learning lessons at the end of each chapter of the book to kind of give readers takeaways from her inspiring life. And I really loved reconnecting with Tiffany for this interview. She is just a really wonderful and smart person who has really, to me, seemingly landed in a place with some really fantastic perspective about her time on The Real Housewives of Dallas. Like, she seems very genuinely thankful for some of the positive impacts that it's had on her life, which are undeniable, while also simultaneously paying dust to the people who made that experience way more difficult than it should have been for her. I'm likely going to try to stop by Tiffany's book signing at Barnes & Noble in New York City on Tuesday. So if you're available in the middle of the day on Tuesday, come check that out and maybe I'll be there. But before that, I'm going to be doing something really fun around the Met Gala tonight on Monday. So keep an eye on my Instagram for that if you're interested in seeing some of that content. But until then, enjoy my conversation with Tiffany Moon, all about her time on The Real Housewives of Dallas, as well as her new book, Joy Prescriptions: How I Learned to Stop Chasing Perfection and Embrace Connection, which is available for pre-order today and comes out tomorrow, May 6, wherever your books. I'll be back tomorrow with another housewife. I want to gab. All right, today we're gabbing with Dr. Tiffany Moon, former Real Housewives of Dallas star, influencer, entrepreneur, now the author of Joy Prescriptions, How I Learned to Stop Chasing Perfection and Embrace Connection. Tiffany and I were first connected years ago when she was on the show and we did an interview together, and we haven't really connected since. And so I'm really excited to see Tiffany's face on the screen. Tiffany, congratulations on the book, first of all. It's really exciting and a huge accomplishment to release a book like this, honestly. And thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm doing amazing. Thank you so much for having me. It's good to see you. It's been like 4 years.
Which is crazy because I feel like the way that I can evaluate time since COVID has like been so drastically altered. It's like for me, like that, it feels like it was before COVID that was happening, I guess, but it wasn't. We were in the thick of it then. But yeah, I can't believe it's been that long.
We have lots to catch up on.
We do. So how are you feeling this book comes out May 6th. How are you feeling with Joy Prescriptions, almost available for people to read? It really is like in a lot of ways your life story.
It is. I tell people that it's a memoir with a personal development angle because I read a lot of memoirs. You can see all these books behind me right now. And I read a lot of self-help books. And I tried to meld this one with the two because it's the story of my life. So it's memoir-based. But at the end of each chapter, there's a joy prescription for the reader. Because it's like you read a memoir about someone's life and it's like, oh, okay, that's lovely and nice and interesting. But like, how is that going to help me, right? At the end of the day, it's like, how can I help more people? So I thought I will tell the story of my life and what I learned from it and what you can take from that to improve your life.
And that's the perfect way to approach it. I think especially for you, because you've had such like a singular life and you've had such a colorful, like you've had so many experiences in your life. And like, it's one, inspiring, but two, I think you're totally right that like, we read these inspiring stories of people like yourself, but like, what is there to take away from it? And I think that for you to write it out for people is really, sometimes we need it spelled out for us. We really do.
Yeah. And I mean, look, some of the joy prescriptions are not like life-changing advice that you've never heard before. You know, like one of them in chapter 3 is like, stop the cycle of compare and despair. Like stop comparing yourself to other people. Mm-hmm. Your business may be not as far along as someone else's, your Instagram follower account, but like this never-ending game of comparison is not going to serve you. You know, and it's not like people are going to be like, oh my God, Dr. Moon, that's so revelational. I've never heard that advice ever before in my life. No, of course we all know that. But I think when it comes within the context of what I just told you within that chapter, you can see how it fits along with everything else, right?
Yeah, I think sometimes we need the story attached to the lesson, right? And I think that's an amazing format. When you're writing a book like this, again, that involves all your family members, so many loved ones, do you run certain stories by them before you?
No. Yeah.
Why not?
Because they will try to change it. It's like when I have a business idea, if I have a business partner, or sometimes I run things by my husband, but you start asking for opinions too early and it changes what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so as far as telling this story, I wrote everything exactly how I wanted to. And then I did work with an editor to sort of massage things, especially in those earlier chapters about my childhood.
Right.
There were some things that I wanted to soften a little bit. But she had told me from the very beginning, she was like, if you start censoring yourself from the very beginning, the emotion is not going to come from the book. She was like, how about you write exactly how you felt and how you perceive something to happen to you? Then on the back end, I'll help you read over it. We'll massage some of those, you know, prickly parts. And that worked really well for me. And even with the Real Housewives chapter, well, first of all, we had to run it through legal, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right, because I'm not trying to like get in trouble, right? I usually like to be on the good side of lawyers, not on responding to things. And so we ran it through legal. And I was like, there are lots of things that I'm going to say that probably are going to upset certain people. And what my editor and lawyer told me was, all you can say is what happened and how it made you feel. No one can argue with that. Mm-hmm. You could say XYZ happened and it made me feel this way. That's
your feelings cannot be like, you can't be sued over your feelings, right?
Correct. As long as you are factual.
Yeah.
Which, you know, roll the tape. RHOD season 5, roll the tape.
Done.
And you write how that situation made you feel.
Mm-hmm.
We're good because mm-hmm. no one can argue with that, right?
And yeah.
Okay, so we didn't name any names, but the
people, I noticed
the
that
people will know. The people will know. I mean, if you know, you know, and if you don't, it doesn't matter. So whatever.
I agree. Yeah, and also like that's not what I went to that chapter, and I was like, the book isn't for the tea about Real Housewives. Like
No. Go ahead. Yeah, we don't want to falsely advertise, y'all. There are 12 chapters, and chapter 8 is the Real Housewives chapter. There is a little bit of tea spilled.
Of course.
But it is not. This is not a Real Housewives book.
I think it's more about, and especially when I would think back to Real Housewives of Dallas, and I would think about that final season that you were on, like, I really did, like, think about, like, what, I feel like your experience, like, overall is, like, the more... Again, like it was pretty singular, like the your time on that show. And like that's sort of what I think about sort of big picture more in terms of like and less like, oh, like nitpicking the, you know, certain things that happened.
Yeah.
On and off filming.
Somebody else that I was talking to who also got an advanced copy of the book for press said that they read the entire thing and it made them want to go back and rewatch season 5 of Dallas. And I was like, girl, why would you do that?
Yeah, that's not necessarily the reaction that I had necessarily.
I was like, now that I have like your behind the scenes take and all, and it's been a hot minute since I've watched it. She's like, I think this weekend I'm going to like chill and like rewatch it on Peacock or whatever. And I was like, you do you, boo. If that's how you want to spend your time, you go for it.
And we'll get into the Housewives of it all in a little bit, but I would say that my reaction was more like, oh damn, like I would love to see Tiffany Moon back on TV. That was more like my experience with the kind of finishing that chapter. But you know, I do think that something that I really love about you, Tiffany, especially since Housewives, is like I feel like you've had this more open approach to life in terms of like trying things out, wearing many hats, whether it is your content creation, you pursuing comedy. I just feel like you have like a breadth of talents that you're like are allowing yourself to like lean into and just try things out. How did you get to that point? Like what was there something that you unlocked in recent years to get
there? Yes, this is such a good question. And you are very generous with the breadth of talent. Very generous.
I don't think so. I think that's very accurate personally, but okay.
So 10 years ago, I was working full-time as an academic anesthesiologist, raising twin toddlers, very devoted wife. And I just thought I had to be this prim, proper, laced up kind of gal in order for everyone to take me seriously. My whole life, I kind of felt like when I walked into a room that like people didn't take me seriously. I had no presence. You know, I was small, I was female, I was Asian, I spoke quietly, I never raised my hand to say anything. And I really do have to credit Housewives with sort of allowing me to learn to use my voice. Like prior to that, I never spoke up about anything. Like I got steam matted, doormat, whatever. Like I just, I didn't know how to speak up for myself. And honestly, it was being on Real Housewives of Dallas that taught me that I need to have a voice and stand up for myself. It's wild how that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, like the doors opened and I was like, oh my God, I've been missing out on so many experiences because I thought I had to be this straight laced, buttoned up kind of doctor for people to take me seriously. But actually the people who had conscious or unconscious biases against me, they didn't take me more seriously just because I acted that way.
Right.
You know, and it kept me from doing a lot of things that I wanted to do, like content creation, like trying my hand at stand-up comedy, like writing a memoir. And once I did Housewives and the world kind of opened up to me, I was like, oh,
yeah.
I can do lots of different things. And I really have to credit Housewives for that.
That's great. And I feel like a lot of people say sort of a positive of reality TV in general is that it can, watching yourself back can be really a reflective exercise and sort of like force the issue on yourself. And like that, you know, I'm sure sometimes that leans a little bit like problematic and toxic, but in the best cases, it can be something like you and sort of your experience with it in that way.
Yeah. And there's nothing like watching yourself back on TV to cringe at some of your behaviors, mannerisms, things you said, the way your voice sounds. I mean, I always say to like the internet trolls and I'm like, you cannot be mean to me because I'm the most mean to myself. So like, don't even worry about it. Like, also, I grew up with an Asian mother. So like, try me. You know
what
I mean?
You crack the joke first. Right. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Like, you can't even laugh at me because I'm already laughing. So you, at best, you get to laugh with me, but you don't get to laugh at me because I'm already laughing at myself.
Period. And I also think that your approach to, towards the end of the book, you talk about mean comments and internet trolls and just sort of how you have tried to overcome some of like the, just how you think about that and how you let it kind of sit with you. And I think anybody who puts things online has dealt with that, you know, and like the one negative review overpowers the 20 positive reviews that you can get, like of my podcast, for example. Like, those things do stick with me, you know? And I just think the way that you talked about it in your book was a really refreshing and a good reminder of just sort of, we're, as humans, we're almost conditioned to do that in terms of the negativity bias, I think is what you called it.
Yep.
I don't know. I just liked your approach. I found it refreshing, and it clearly took you a minute to get there.
Yes. Yes. Lots of spilled tears over troll comments, and it's not even worth it.
Not worth it. Not worth it. You talked about your college experience at Cornell when you got there at 17, and you were just like head down, blinders on, I'm going to study. You didn't do any socializing or like extracurriculars or fun classes or anything. And I know that in med school, you had a different experience where it was a little, like, much more fun for you. But I'm curious, that college experience and like that sort of, if any of that approach to new experiences or different groups of people, do you think that any of that carried on with you into Housewives and sort of impacted how you approached doing the show and kind of getting into that group of people?
Yeah, I will tell you one critical mistake that I made going on Housewives is that I went into the show thinking I would make new friends. Mm. I really did. And that sounds so naive that it's bordering on stupid when I hear myself say it now. But at the time that I signed on to do the show in 2020, I really thought that I was going to make all these new girlfriends and it would be like a huge slumber party and kumbaya. Like, yeah, there would be a little bit of drama because you put, you know, seven strong women in a room. There's going to be something. But like, I did not understand the level of negativity and toxicity that those women wanted to engage in. I was like, holy crap, like, this is not what I think I signed up for.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that if you hadn't gone in with that sort of desire or that sort of expectation to make all these new girlfriends, do you think if you had somehow not gone in with that your experience would have been different? Or
I think I would have acted differently because I was trying so hard to ingratiate myself with these women and get in on their jokes and pranks and be like them, you know? And the fact of the matter is, I'm not like them. And if I hadn't approached it like that, I think I would have acted different. I wouldn't have been such a tryhard. And I would have kind of viewed doing the show more of like doing my job than like making new friends, right? Like, I went into it, I think, with the wrong mindset and approach. Or maybe it was the right mindset.
I don't think there is like one right mindset, to be honest. And I also wonder, I'm curious if you think, like, if you had been that way, do you think the other women would have received you differently? Or do you think that's just how they would have always received you?
I think that they were always going to receive
me. Got it.
Poorly. Like, they were not nice to me from the very beginning. And actually, I kind of didn't perceive that live until I watched it show.
Right. Yeah, you write about that in the book.
Right. And it was very two-faced behavior from certain people more than others. It was very abundantly clear to me that they were not interested in making friends with me.
Got it. And do you think that, like, because you have friends on other that have been on other Housewives shows, Dr. Nicole, Crystal, like, I know that you have friends kind of throughout the Housewives universe, and like, through discussions with them, do you think that was particular to your cast that they were like this, or do you think that's kind of like a pervasive Housewives thing?
No, I think it was specific to my cast.
I
wish, in a world where I had, you know, a magic ball, that I could join another cast. Like, I wish I could be on Miami with Nicole, or that I wish I would have been on Beverly Hills with Crystal, or even now, or the new New York that they redid with new cast. Like, I just look at those women, and so many of them are so interesting, running businesses. They've overcome so much adversity in their life. They have rich cultural experiences and seem to be willing to meet new people and try new things. And then I'm like, God, why didn't my cast suck so bad? Wah, wah. I know. I sound like such a victim right now.
No, but I also, Tiffany, I also think that like you, there, it was like this perfect storm too of just like the timing of your season and like what Brandy had done before and what the kind of producer sort of got you to talk about with her on camera. Like there were just so many things, COVID, like so many factors that went into that season. And like, I just don't think you were set up for success in the way that you should have been and could have been. But one thing I wanted to ask you about that you write about in Joy Prescriptions is like you turned down the show in season four after Deandra recommended you to producers. And then they sort of circled back to you in season five. She and Mama D convinced you to do the show. And something that I talk about kind of a lot is like, I think that some of the best housewives are women who don't quote unquote need the show. Like you're not doing it necessarily for the paycheck in you know, because it's like your first season, you're not like paid that much in the grand scheme of things. It's more like the opportunity kind of thing and trying it out. Do you agree with that? That like some of the best housewives don't quote unquote need it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think also some of the best housewives are the ones that need it because they're so desperate to do whatever because they like actually need the paycheck that they'll like do whatever the producers say and like be messy and drama and all that stuff because like they need to secure their spot because this is like literally their livelihood or so much a part of their identity that they will do whatever. So I think the best kinds of housewives are the ones that like don't need it at all. Like Dr. Nicole after her baby was like, I can't deal with this. It's too much. And then the ones that like so desperately need it, not only for monetary reasons, but also for like identity and all those other.
It's so wrapped up into it.
Yes. And then in the middle is probably like the middle.
Got it. It's the extremes that we, right.
It's always the extremes.
Yeah. And, you know, in the book, you talk about some of your people pleasing tendencies, also like your perfectionism. And I feel like some of those things came out in this experience for you, which was like, the people pleasing was doing what producers asked of you without sort of doing any pushback. And part of that is also just being new to the whole environment, right? But also, you also mentioned that you took notes on the season before you started filming to like it came when you did the prank with the crickets on the pizza. And like, you were like, well, this is what they do on the show. Like you do pranks, right? And I'm curious how much that also contributed to your experience not being positive. Like you again, like.
I just think I tried too hard. I think I was people pleasing to the producers and trying too hard with my castmates and, you know, trying to ingratiate myself with them and be like them when in fact I'm not like them. I think if I had just actually gone in a more casual, relaxed way that perhaps they wouldn't have, I don't know. But it's hard to say.
You can't do the what ifs. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to say. Maybe it could have gone differently. Sometimes I get nostalgic about it and like wish to redo. But then sometimes I'm like, no, why the hell would I ever do that? Like that was terrible. Like, you know what I mean? It's like you see your friend with a brand new baby and it's like, you know, 6 months old and like super cuddly and sweet. And you're just like, oh, maybe I should have another one. And then it like throws up and starts crying. And you're like, no, just kidding. Like that's how it, like sometimes I'm like, people always ask, the question I get asked most often is like, if the show came back, like, would you do it? Right. And I'm just like, yeah, I mean, if like half the cast were overturned and we had new ladies in the mix, like, yeah, I would consider it. And then sometimes I'm like, no, why the hell would I ever do that again? It just depends on my mood that day.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace. To nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
I'm wondering, because I feel like that, again, you do credit Housewives with changing kind of your approach to life in some ways. And I'm wondering if having to be so open for reality TV and just kind of talking about your life and what you've gone through and what was happening at that time, did that prepare you for writing the book too, in terms of just like excavating your life for different stories?
Yeah, that's such an insightful question, because I think if I hadn't have done Housewives, I probably wouldn't have tried doing the comedy thing. I was already doing content creation before.
Yeah, Housewives, you were.
But I think it kind of opened my eyes to all the different possibilities out there. And because I put myself out there and I got the good comments and the bad, but it actually allowed me to see how I could inspire and change other people's lives. And then I was having a podcast with Ryan Bailey. Mm-hmm. And he was like, "So when's your book coming out?" And I was like, "I'm not writing a book. You must have me confused with someone else or something." He was like, "No. I was trying to tell you, like, you should write a book."
Oh, no. I love Ryan. That's
pushy to do it. I told him, I was like, "I think you were one of the first people who really planted the seed that I could write a book." And I was marinating on this for over a year before I embarked on the project, because book writing is not like content creation. You make a cute video, you edit it, you caption it, you send it out into the world. No. Book, first you have to write a proposal. Well, first you have to get a literary agent. Then you have to write a proposal. Then you have a bid day with the big publishers, hoping that somebody buys the rights to your book and gives you an advance. Then you start writing. Then I had a junior editor. Then I had a senior editor. So I started writing this book in 2022.
Wow.
It is 2025. It has been a labor of love. And in many ways, I think I wrote the book for myself.
In what way?
It was so cathartic for me
to
talk about these childhood experiences that I had. I mean, there's stuff in the book. My brother read the book. I gave him one of the advanced reader copies for press. And he was like, "There is stuff in here that I don't even know about you, sis." And I was like, "I know. Nobody knows that stuff. Like, there are stuff in this book that I've never told a living soul, maybe except for my best friend and my husband." And it's really an excavation of my life and like putting it all out there. And I do think that going on Housewives like led me to have the fortitude to be able to write this book.
Mm-hmm. And the openness and like you, I'm also glad that when you were writing about your experience on Housewives, you mentioned the whole scene kind of that culminated with your mom and how that like almost made it all worth it for you, because like it has forced the issue on and having this conversation that was very much a truthful, honest conversation. It might have been, I think you wrote that it was quote unquote forced. Yeah, force is the word you used. But like ultimately it still happened. You still had that conversation. It still was a big positive impact or a positive change with that relationship. And so I see that kind of happening also with your book, maybe with certain probably stories that you mentioned in here of like, once somebody reads it, like, oh, it's going to improve your relationships in a lot of ways, I bet. Or I hope.
I hope. Yeah. I hope that it's not going to be opening up a can of worms. But like my editor told me from the beginning, she was like, "Girl, you just got to write this for you. Like, you cannot be like, oh, if someone reads this, they're going to be upset." And she was like, "That was your lived childhood experience. Like, you know, maybe it'll be an opportunity for you to have a conversation with your parents about the ways you felt about your childhood. But like, don't not write that you had a lonely childhood because you think that's going to hurt them when they read it."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. A couple of quicker sort of housewives-y questions. I know that you've confirmed in the past that test shoots happened for season 6. And what did that entail?
For my involvement, there were two potential cast members that I shot test scenes with, because they have like a interview with a producer, and then they want to see them like in some dynamic group work and how they show on camera. So we had cameras. It was shot at Deandra's house in the summertime, and the other cast member came over and we were laughing about something and just having a conversation. But there were cameras in the room and we were all mic'd. And I thought it went well. It was actually kind of a surprise to me when the executive producer called me about a month after we shot the test scenes and were like, "Bravo's going to put Dallas on hiatus." I kind of thought that, you know, we were filming all these test scenes, and at least I was told by the executive producer that at least 3 people were getting fired. He would never tell me who. I tried. Uh-huh. I really tried it. I was like, "Does it rhyme with Bethany?" He was like, not moving his face. I was like, "Does it rhyme with Mary?" And he was like, I was like, "Blink your left eye if it rhymes with," and he just
didn't budge.
He would not play at all. And I'm kind of glad, because now I can honestly say, like, I have no idea. But I was told that they were going to clean house, which was at least 50% of the people, and which was going to make room for these new people that we had test shot with. 2 of them I knew very well. One of them is like one of my closest friends. And the other one is someone who's married to a doctor and I feel like, you know, knows what it's like and doesn't fun of me when I need to go home at 10 p.m. because I have patients the next day, you know.
Normal.
Just thought like, oh, maybe it'll be better this round two because it'll be with people that I actually like and get along with and want to spend time with. And then they were like, it's going on hiatus. I was like, oh, but I'll tell you, the other feeling besides surprise when they called me to tell me was relief.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they had gone ahead, I was probably going to do it. You know what I mean?
Like, of course.
I wasn't going to be like, just kidding, Bravo, I don't want to. So when they kind of made the decision for me, I felt relieved. I felt like I had been like excused from jury duty or something, you know? Like, I was like, oh, God, thank God. Now I can go back to my regular life. And like, and filming took up so much time and energy that I, quite frankly, was not a very good wife or mother during the several months of filming because there was no bandwidth for that, you know, and you become so self-absorbed.
Totally.
During filming and during when it's airing, I was such a self-absorbed, like almost narcissistic person because you're just looking at what the show and how you were portrayed and what people on social media are saying about it's too much. Like these housewives that have done it for like season after season after season, like Kyle Richards has done like 12 seasons or something. Kudos to her because my mental health would be in the trash can if
I believe
I did it. That many seasons. I just don't know how those women do it.
Well, that's why I also, in the past like year, I've just like kind of gotten more on the train of like, I think taking a season off for any housewife, especially after like even just like 3 to 4 to 5 seasons is like would be so beneficial to so many people. It's just like touch grass, get some oxygen out of this bubble and then come back with some more perspective, you know?
Yeah.
Like
it's wild.
It really is.
It was a very wild chapter of my life. But again, I'm so grateful, honestly, to Bravo and all the people that I worked with because I never imagined that, you know, I would be like on national TV. It's kind of cool to think about.
We heard you. 9 years of Bring Back the Snack Wrap and you've won. But maybe you should have asked for more. Say hello to the Hot Honey Snack Wrap. Now you've really won. Go to McDonald's and get it while you can.
I think a lot of people say once a housewife, always a housewife. And I'm curious how much you ascribe to that idea because, again, you do so many other things and you've done so many other things since then. But also, you know, so many people have stuck with you because we met you on the show, you know?
Yes. Sometimes I would have been like, you know, I only did one season and I've done so many great things besides housewives. You know, I'm a doctor. I take care of cancer patients, trauma patients. Now I have a book. I run a women's leadership summit called Lead Her Summit that's in Dallas every November. Like, and then people would be like, but I loved you on Housewives. And I used to be like, oh, I'm so much more than just a housewife. But then I thought about it and I'm like, no, I should be grateful because it was through Housewives that these people were introduced to me or else they wouldn't know who the hell I was.
Mm.
And now they can sort of get into my ecosystem and maybe learn about some of the other endeavors that I'm pursuing. But like, I shouldn't be upset that they know me as a housewife. Like, I should be grateful. And so anytime anyone comes up to me, like at a restaurant, at the airport, wherever, and they're like, I loved you on Housewives. Can we get a selfie? I'm always like, yes, girl. Like, I'm flattered that anyone wants to. And I'm like, can you put a filter on that? So I don't have no makeup on right now. I don't have no. I'm like, let me get my sunglasses and then we take this picture. You know what I mean? But like,
yeah.
I think sometimes when people get too much air in their head, like you were saying, and they're like, oh, I don't want to take pictures with fans or whatever. I'm like, no, I am so grateful for my fans because without them, I wouldn't have people to buy my book and like I wouldn't have people to help if no one knew who I was so that I could reach and help them.
Yeah, it kind of all feeds the same thing. And I think that's really nice that you have that perspective on it now. Last question about it. Deandra's the only cast member that you mentioned in the book. Are you guys still close? Do you still talk frequently? Okay, that's nice. That's nice to hear.
She's doing all this like cooking stuff. Like after Housewives, I went into like the, you know, writing, personal development, women's leadership retreat, that kind of thing. And she went like full out cooking. So she's like doing these cooking shows and all this stuff. And I don't know my way around the kitchen. You know what I'm saying? And so we haven't done any projects together because they're not really aligned. But I still consider her a close friend and, you know, see her here and there. Yeah.
I love that. I love to hear that. Well, Tiffany, Joy Prescriptions, when people read this, I know that we literally have the Joy Prescriptions at the end of every chapter. And so we'll have actual takeaways that you are telling us. But how do you hope people feel when they when they close the book, when they finish it? What do you hope people really take from it, from your story?
Oh, that's such a good question. I hope that people feel validated through their experiences. I hope that people feel worthy, because I think a lot of my earlier life and a lot of the things that I was chasing, like perfection and achievement, is because I felt that I wasn't worthy enough on my own, that I needed to achieve things and degrees and gold stars in order for people to love me. And actually, that's not it at all. The people that I make connections with, that we're able to laugh together, that's what truly brings me joy. And it's like, I had to find all these external achievements in order to arrive at the conclusion that it all comes from within. You know, it's like full circle. So I want people who read the book to know that the joy comes from within, and it comes from the journey and not the destination, and to surround yourself with like good people who lift you up instead of bring you down, because that matters so much in life, who you hang out with.
100%. I think that's a beautiful note to end on. Well, everyone listening or watching, Joy Prescriptions, it's available May 6th through every books. Pre-order now. I know the pre-orders help a lot, so pre-order whenever you're hearing this. So ever since I met you on the show and did our interview, like, I've just been inspired by your story and your approach to life. And I think for you to share it in another medium is just going to be a benefit to a lot of people. So I thank you for writing this book. Truly.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you so much for doing this. And it was great to be reconnected with you.
I know. I'm going to find our old from 2021.
For AOL,
I remember it. And I really remember us having like a really good time.
Yeah,
and laughing.
Me too.
And you were like, so do you think you'll do the show again? And I was like,
I remember asking you that. Of course.
Find that clip.
I will find it.
We need to find the receipts, because that was so funny.
I remember that. Oh, my God. Tiffany, you're
the
best.
You live in L.A.?
I live in New York. I'm in the East Village in New York. Yeah. Are you ever out here?
I'm on my book tour on May 6th in New York. I want to see you in person and give you a hug for real.
You're the best. Thank you so much. And for doing it on a Sunday, too. I really appreciate
that. No, thank you so much. Because I'm like on weekdays in the operating room and kids.
I got it.
It's too crazy. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And keep up with all things Gabbing with Gabe at Gabbing with Gabe on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gabe is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.